Everyone and No One, a true crime podcast, hosted by Ian Twasson, Episode 1. In the spring of 2022, the 44 Division of the Toronto Police Service discovered the burnt remains of Rachel Amina Darwish, Daniel Brewer, and Matig Biscayne in southern Ontario, Canada. The only clues offering an explanation for the three deaths were found in an anonymous blog written by an unknown individual. The following content was taken from the blog website, everyoneandnoone.org. Posted on March 13. For the last few weeks, I was Michael Anderson. I stole all my pics from some guy in Australia named Alexander Vukcevic. Posts filled my page like a list of attributes. My dirt bike, my cat, me on a boat. My bio read, "Eat well, stay in shape, die anyway." I was in Rachel Darwish's DMs. The top part of her face was cut off in her profile pic, showing just her toothy smile and dark hair falling onto her shoulders. Her posts were mostly food pics, inspirational quotes, concert pics of Prince, sunsets, and photos of her taken at angles that hide her face. I slid into her DMs like this. "Is this Rachel, the famous ninja warrior? You found me, LOL. I'm your biggest fan. Lucky you, LOL. OMG, I see you like Prince. RIP. Yes, gone too soon. Did you know that Prince's last tweet was, 'I am transformed'? No. Is that true?" We chatted like this for weeks, but banter turned into deep conversations, some lasting all night. Then this morning, she messaged, "I'll be in your ends on Thursday. Want to meet at counselor at like 9? Hello? Are you there?" The time on my laptop showed 10:58 p.m., her last message sent hours ago. With my finger resting almost weightlessly on my touchpad, I scrolled up through our hundreds of messages. I fiddled with the brass Zippo in my other hand, flicking it open then closed. The whiff of lighter fluid lingered in the air. I sucked in the final drag from my cigarette, dropped the button to an empty wine bottle by my feet, and I decided never to be Michael again. The police sirens outside invaded my apartment. Michael, who justified me, who gave me the satisfaction of being someone, was gone from me, freed from the prison of my mind to live online in a way that my flesh and blood could never do. I dragged my fingertip across the touchpad, logged out of Instagram, and the bitter taste of unreality returned to me. All those city sounds, motors revving, dump trucks backing up, people yelling, were back again. I raised another cigarette to my mouth, almost mechanically, and exhaled stale smoke that pushed a long, dusty cobweb hanging aimlessly from the ceiling. My apartment was small and almost bare of furniture. Ahead of me was the kitchen. Beside the kitchen stretched a narrow hallway leading to two bedrooms and a tiny washroom. For the longest time, I didn't know there was a name for my sort of addiction. Now I know it's called catfishing, according to UrbanDictionary.com. The definition of catfish is catfish, a fake or stolen identity created or used for the purpose of beginning a deceptive online relationship. 2,027 upvotes, 139 downvotes. Over the years, I've created so many profiles that I don't remember all of them. There was John Carroll, a graffiti artist, Stephen Miller, a musician who played the banjo and ukulele, Maurice, a paradigmic, Jeff, a web developer. I recognized myself more in these profiles and less in myself, if it's true that I'm somebody at all. Each profile had a girl. The girls varied from chatty to shy, from young to mature, from posting every day to almost never. Most of them lived outside Canada, but Rachel was from Toronto and another was from Montreal. My foot felt numb. I stood up and stretched, tippy-toeing and wiggling my toes until feeling came back. Sitting down, I leaned closer to my laptop on the coffee table and fought the temptation to fill myself with another name, another profile. I didn't know how else to connect with anyone. I had no real relationships in the outside world, not including my therapist or the clerk at the corner store where I buy smokes. Maybe if I had a real job, I'd have friends. But who needs a real job when you have crypto? Listening to the thumping of my neighbor's footsteps above, I tried in vain to remember the last time I left my apartment and into the world where things happen. I closed my browser and my desktop background image stared back at me. My Psychedelics Anonymous Genesis, number 2945. An apt reflection of my true self, a figure sitting in shadow, faceless, justified only by a screen. I zoomed into the image and studied the millions of pixels forming this profile that encapsulated me. But there was no one behind its features. There was just a slight coldness, a feeling of emptiness. That feeling was the only indication I existed, and I needed more than that. I needed to be someone. Comments. Goodies says, "You're not alone." Smiley face emoji. Posted on March 14. The therapist checked his phone again. His office was long and narrow, like a short hallway with furniture. I sat on a vinyl couch. The walls were the color of Pepto-Bismol, I suppose to soothe his patients. The pink walls clashed with the earthy landscape painting behind his desk. There's a nice rug at my feet, some kind of designer carpet, and I sort of felt sorry for it, stuck in this hideous room. The therapist was a spindly man with meaty hands. He folded into his chair like a marionette. He wore a strange sweater with a giant smiling face of a puppy dog embroidered over his entire torso area. If I had seen him on the street, I might have laughed. But in this room, he looked right at home, whereas I felt ridiculous in my khakis and white polo. The chirping of birds outside was muffled by the two layers of glass on the large window that didn't open, probably to keep his patients from jumping out. I finished ranting and waited for him to look at me, wondering if he was even listening at all. He squinted at his phone, swiping with his stubby thumb. I looked out the window at the slow-moving clouds, and for a second, I couldn't believe how hopeless everything felt. "Sorry," he said, putting his phone down on his lap. "Going back to, what did you call it, catfishing?" "That's right. When was the last time you spent an entire day without going online?" "That sounds depressing," I said.
"Depressing?"
"Yeah," I said, "not going online."
"Why are you always online?"
"I don't know. That's why I'm depressed." He looked at me for what felt like a long time. He raised his hand and I thought he was going to check his phone again. But instead, he reached over his desk to grab something.
"You have to get out and start interacting with people. Socialize," he said,
his head bobbing as if on a spring, his thick hand canvassing his desk blindly.
"Go on some dates. Get a roommate."
"A roommate?" I blinked. His hand finally found it, a notepad and a pen. A small grunt escaped his tightly pressed lips as he snatched the pen and pad in a single swoop.
"Listen, take this to Grace at the end of the hall."
He scribbled and ripped out a page, his head still bobbing.
"This will help. Take one in the morning and one at night."
He handed me the piece of paper and I felt a twinge of hope, like a tiny piece of pleasure in my gut. I held my eyes on him, blinking a lot, as if I had just woken up.
"And here's our next appointment."
He wrote on the back of his business card and stood up quickly. I jumped up to meet him. "Thanks." I forced a smile that came to my face easier than I had expected.
"You'll be all right soon enough," he said,
and I believed him. I walked out of his office believing that my life might change, and I would finally be someone. Posted on March 14, second post. At home, I struggled to open the bottle until I realized it was childproofed. Squinting to line up the tiny arrows on the bottle and the cap, I popped the lid open, dropping a single pill in my palm. I threw it onto my tongue and swallowed it without water. My reflection in the washroom mirror stared back at me. There was still no one behind my face, but that was going to change. I concentrated on the contours of my face for a long time. I flashed my teeth through my shaggy beard. I brushed them, scrubbing aggressively. The water I spat out was tinged with red. I swung my mirror open, revealing a medicine cabinet behind it, and grabbed one of the disposable razors from an open plastic package. I jumped in the shower and stayed there for almost an hour, the room filling with steam and the tub filling with facial hair. Looking into the mirror again, I wiped my hand over the steamed-up glass to see my new face. Behind my mask of flesh was not emptiness anymore, but a singular desire to make a real human connection in the physical world. I hadn't even realized until then how much I wanted it. After drying myself, I put on a collared shirt and smothered lotion on my face and neck. Excitement consumed me. Prepared to change my life, I sunk deep into the sofa cushion that was permanently indented and tapped my phone screen on. I tapped the Tinder icon I downloaded months ago but never opened before. I snapped a selfie for my profile and left my bio blank. I leaned back and stared at my profile, satisfied. It was who I was, I thought, empty of content, waiting to be filled. In the search filter, I entered an age range of 20 to 40 within a 10-kilometer radius. Clicking submit, the first girl popped up, Danica, 23, whose pic was poorly lit. I swiped right and then saw Sandra, 25, behind her thick-framed glasses. Swiped right. There was Bella, 34, who was barely visible from a sun glare streaking across her face. Felicia, 28, was in a cropped group pic, leaving a severed arm resting on her shoulders. I swiped right to all of them and kept going. After a good hour of swiping, I got two matches. Jennifer, 29, her bio was, teaching myself to play guitar. And Lei, 25. Did my best and God did the rest. I messaged both girls. Jennifer, 29, wrote back instantly. I put on a fake personality and responded. Our conversation went, teaching yourself to play guitar? I'm impressed. Are you awesome? Yes, I am teaching myself to play the guitar. Not awesome. Slow process. Nice. I'm impressed. I know some basic chords. What kind of music are you into playing? Well, just learning the basics now. So not really playing songs yet. But right now I've been listening to a lot of Pearl Jam, 1975, and Muse. Very cool. Love those bands. I play a lot of Pixies and Nirvana. We should totally have a jam session. That's pretty awesome. Haha, maybe we should. Why don't we grab a coffee and get to know each other sometime? Then we can decide if we want to do a jam session. I really am a total beginner. Don't drink coffee, but sure, that would be nice. You're in downtown, right? Tim Horns in the Eaton Center, then. I'm fine either tomorrow or Thursday, around 5-ish. Tomorrow at 5 works for me. Okay, see you then. Jen.
Posted on March 15. I rushed to meet with Jennifer, 29, or Jen, at Timmy's in the food court. I was 10 minutes late. As I pushed through the mall, my heart beat faster. I dug my fingernails into my palm. My breath quickened with each step, and I licked my lips nervously. At the food court, I saw a lone brunette sitting at a corner table, bored, trying to pick something out of her back tooth while thumbing through a free daily newspaper. I recognized her from her picture. She looked slightly older than her photo, but still kind of cute. She noticed me approaching her. I smiled. She didn't. Jen? My voice cracked. Yes. She folded the newspaper and pushed it aside. I was going to offer my hand when she interrupted. I'm going to get some tea. Do you want anything? Please, coffee, double-double. I reached for my wallet, but she walked away. Sitting down, I saw grains of salt scattered on the table and wiped them off with my hand. When she returned with our drinks,
We sat in an awkward silence for the first little while. She held her tea close to her mouth, as if hiding behind her cup. She seemed sleepy. Her V-neck t-shirt displayed the word princess spelled out across her chest, and her jeans hung low on her hips. She had just the faintest trace of an accent, something I couldn't put my finger on. "So what do you want to know?" she said. "I was hoping I could get to know you better," I said. "Hmm." Her eyes raked me up and down. "Well, all right then." She began to talk almost endlessly about herself, how she was bipolar, and how she hated religion, capitalism, and people in general. "All these people make me sick. What do they know?" she said. "You're not happy?" I leaned forward. My right hand suddenly felt hot, and I realized I was holding the coffee she had given me. "What's there to be happy about?" she said, pivoting left and right on her food court swivel chair. "I know what's missing." I took a sip of coffee. "You haven't found your soulmate." That wasn't me talking. It was the naive romantic from one of my fake profiles. I, whoever it is I am, hated that cliche term, soulmate, and I'm pretty sure she did too. She seemed cynical enough. She just kind of looked away. "Are you a romantic?" I asked her. "No, I don't believe in it," she said. I drank from my cup, thinking of what to say next. "What do you do for work?" I said. "Retail," she said. I waited for her to ask me the same question back, but instead she looked down at the floor beside her and went off into a daydream. Then she started talking more about herself. She said something about her family being the only important thing in her life, and that she was sad that they would never know how important they were to her. She said she was thinking of having a baby. She didn't care about having a man, just a baby. Suddenly she was quiet and looked at me. "What?" she said, and I was worried that I'd done something wrong. "What?" I said. "You're looking at me weird," she said. "Sorry, I was just listening." She leaned back. "You don't do this much, do you?" she said bluntly, as if it was the only way she knew how to be. I blinked. "No, not much." Jen chewed her lip and said nothing for a while. I searched my mind for something to say, but nothing came. I thought of my apartment, of being in a delirium of nothingness that felt more comfortable than this. "Dating is overrated," she said with a casual disdain, and I wondered why she was on a dating app in the first place. But at the same time, a wave of relief came over me. I didn't have to try anymore. My eyes drifted towards the red exit sign by the emergency doors. Of course, I'd have to come up with an excuse to leave early, or I could pretend to be sick. "Well, I have to get going," she said easily and stood up. I sprang to my feet with equal ease. I felt as if a weight had been taken off my shoulders, one I didn't even know I was carrying. Who was this person? I thought. Was this the flirty Jennifer 29 I had chatted with the night before? "It was nice meeting you," I said. We nodded to each other goodbye, both knowing we would never see each other again. Comments. Goodies says, "Eaton Center? I'm from Toronto too." Smiley face emoji. Posted on March 16. On my sofa, I slouched, cigarette smoke streaming upwards from my hand in a straight line. Voices from a PA Spaces recording rambled from my phone speaker, but in the haze of my medication, the words were meaningless to my ears, like the meanderings of a 2-year-old. Dating was supposed to help me, connect me to the world where things happen. But with Jen, there was no connection, as if we lived in 2 separate realities. I tried to shake the sleepiness from my head. The pills killed my appetite and left my mouth dry and pasty. My apartment felt like an extension of my mind, a cell for my spirit. I rubbed my eyes and tried to focus hard on the voices. My eyelids drooped, pulled down by grogginess. I sparked my Zippo and hung my hand inches over its flame, indulging in the pain that reminded me I was still here. A new message notification popped up from Tinder. Lay25 replied to my earlier message. "Thank you for the kind words. We'd like to get to know you too. Dinner would be great." I ignored it and opened Instagram instead. The familiar interface comforted me. I tapped on Rachel's page and opened our message thread. Her last message was, "Are you there?" I replied, "Okay for counselor tomorrow. I'll meet you at 9 p.m. inside." This ends episode 1 of Everyone and No One, a true crime podcast hosted by Ian Twasen. To be continued next Tuesday in episode 2, anywhere you get your podcasts. This has been a Dimension Gate production.